Hello, I'm from the UK, and this is Richard Allibone on webtalkradio.net explaining how paranormal is normal. Today we're going to talk about hypnosis. Probably most of you view it as something rather spooky, okay for other people, but not for you. But hypnosis makes use of a perfectly normal state of mind. That is the rather mysterious state of trance. My guest today is John Goodrum, a hypnotist who'll give you some insight into what practical hypnosis is all about. He used to be an engineer working on radar at Marconi's, like myself, and then he was an instrument mechanic at an atomic power station. But he became thoroughly convinced of the power of hypnosis, and he studied it to get his diploma. So I'd like to welcome John Goodrum.
Hello, John.
Hello, Richard. How are you?
Hello. Yes, I'm fine. I'm ringing to hear some of your experiences on hypnosis. So perhaps you could give me some examples of the problems that you treat. The reasons that guests come to see you.
Yes, people come to see me smoking, which is obviously very well advertised, for hypnotherapy. But there's other things like depression, anxiety, panic, confidence, stress, weight, or even drinking. You know, people with excessive drinking.
Yes, I see that there are a lot of things then that you treat, and
yes.
I believe they normally come three or four times to you.
About three times. I have had people come up to sort of six times, but what I do, I try and time it for sort of three sessions, but if for some reason or other, they think that they need more sessions, and obviously they come back. But for smoking, I do that in one session, but I do it with a free backup service. So if for some reason or other they find it difficult to give up, there may be some underlying cause, then they come back free of charge. And because my attitude is that when they go out of the door, they're a non-smoker, so you don't need to smoke. Once you leave the room, that's it, you're a non-smoker. And I also provide a CD to help to reinforce the message.
Yes, I see. So,
yeah. So weight reduction is a bit more difficult because some people expect instant results. I mean, their idea of a portion on a plate is normally much too large for them to actually lose weight, and a lot of them don't want to exercise, but that's the only reason.
Yes, I see. Yes, I didn't. I suppose another one of the fairly big things you treat is excess weight. There's too many people now with too much weight, so that's one of the things. But you say with smoking, you try and do it in one shot, as it were, with one interview.
Yes.
But some people, of course, are difficult to hypnotize because they're afraid of the unknown, I guess.
It's normally the big, roughy, toughy men that are the more difficult to relax. Because it seems as though they're frightened of losing control. Some of them have had to come back. You know, you see them
the
sitting
fear.
In the chair gripping the arm. So I say, there's nothing to worry about. Just relax. But the women are far more responsive, I found.
Yes. Yes, it's the fear of the unknown that is the problem, I believe.
Oh, yes, yes.
Okay, now, and during this first session, and especially if it's just treating for smoking, you have first to relax the patient and get them to feel at home, and try and get them so that they're not afraid of the situation. Try and, I guess, teach them that hypnosis is a fairly normal thing. It's a normal conversation, as it were, but they just have to relax a little bit. That's
yes,
about the size of it.
That's where I normally spend about half an hour before I actually do the hypnotherapy, just purely getting to know me and to feel more relaxed and trying to convince them that there's nothing to worry about.
Mm. Oh, it takes about half an hour. Mm.
Yes, normally. Mm.
Yeah, but somebody that comes for perhaps for other things where you don't actually give treatment in the first session, you have to spend the whole of the first session just getting them used to them, or I suppose you just sort of do a little bit of hypnosis. Is that what happened?
Well, I always do hypnotherapy on the first session, so that even if they are a little bit wary, then the next time they come, they are far more relaxed.
Yeah. Yes, you try and instill the idea that next time you will get relaxed quicker and easier.
Yes.
I suppose that's the traditional approach. Yeah. Now, speaking to you the other day, you explained that your system avoids asking details of the client's problems. Now, how does that work? Because people don't like to have probing questions, do they?
That's right. I mean, some people are only too happy to speak to somebody they don't know and divulge everything and anything. But for most people, as you say, a lot of them, especially if they've got deep-seated problems, then they're of a very sensitive nature, then they are reluctant to speak them. Because I'm a great believer in the use of this silent regression to relieve a lot of the deep-seated problems that have probably existed from childhood. You know, it helps to to get rid of all the bad memories. I first of all go back to the childhood and get them to think of all the good times they've had before I go over to the bad times, and then I get them to look forward to the future. But like you say, I do not ask them to say or do anything. And at the end of the day, it's very good for clearing their mind of all the past problems they've had.
Yes, I see. And then you refer to that as a silent regression, virtually sort
yes.
of regress the client to a younger age and thinking about what happened in their youth. Yeah.
Yes.
And and I believe your method encourages clients to rationalize the problems themselves. Now, having direct suggestions given by yourself. This, I believe, is a rather different way of treating by hypnosis. Is that right?
That's right. I think too many hypnotherapists seem to want to prompt people into saying things, whereas this silent regression method, because of the way it's done, I'm not putting anything in their minds. I'm not prompting them anything or making suggestions. I'm just asking them to go back to their childhood. You know, can you remember the happy times you had as a child? This sort of thing.
Mm. Yeah, I see. And I think you refer to a library of memories. Is that right?
That's correct, yes. Yes, it is called the library technique. I think it was instigated by some American professor.
I see.
He found it very successful. And when I saw it, I thought, yes, there's a much better way of doing it. Because I don't want to know all the ins and outs of people's lives unless it's going to help them. And I can't see that it specifically helps them by me knowing.
How does that system work? What do you say to the client about the library?
When they go back, I talk about books. They're in a library, and all the books are about them, and of the different ages. And when they come through the problem side, all the problems are in their problem books. Well, the first one I would suggest, which is stress. So, right, you've got a book up there, which is stress, right, and I take it off the shelf and throw it in the bin. And then I say that there are many other books up there with problems, and I'll give you a little bit of time to take your problems off the shelf and put them in the bin. But I don't make any suggestions unless they've come to me with a specific problem like anxiety. Then I'll tell them to take the anxiety book off the shelf and throw that in the bin. But then I leave it up to them for a few minutes to take other books off the shelf, throw them away. And then I go through a book which is called I Can't. Now, the I Can't, it's their own restrictions that they've put on these things. People have said that I can't do this, I can't do that. It's only what they've told themselves. It's their own restrictions, their own limitations that are holding them up. So they throw that, or they tear it up and throw it in the bin. And then they put some good books back on the shelf. And they feel a lot better afterwards.
Yes. Well, that's a very interesting technique. It's not really the average system that hypnosis takes. Normally, hypnotists very often, they're always probing for the client's problems in their youth, often blaming some sexual encounter, as a Freudian system dictated. But even if they don't do that, then they will just make direct suggestions, which and it seems to me your system is much better than that. Yeah. Now, one thing that I wonder about is the hypnotic state itself. Is it, do you think, just dreaming while partly awake? So say, relax and fall asleep sort of thing. Is it a dreaming state, do you think?
It's very similar to a dreaming state. It's like just before you nod off to sleep, you're aware of what your surroundings are, what's being said and everything else, but all you want to do is just relax. Because as you appreciate, the mind has got two states. It's the conscious and the unconscious state of mind. The conscious part of the brain does all of the thinking and calculating. The unconscious part does all of our body automatic actions, such as breathing and beating of the heart, that sort of thing. The unconscious protects us from perceived danger, and it can be trained, such as when we learn to drive a car, we learn to use the brake to stop the car. Now, later, if a child runs in front of the car, we just hit the brake pedal, and we do that without thinking, because we've trained our unconscious mind to do that. And we can train our unconscious to do lots of things. And we can also put things right. If somebody's got some sort of fear, then tell their unconscious part of the brain that there's no reason to be frightened of something.
Yeah. And it's all to do with trance. hypnotic trance, and we have to go into trance. We can hypnotize ourselves, I believe, self-hypnosis. Meditation is very similar in that it's a trance state. But my wonder is what I've tried to sort out is what is trance all about? I wonder what your view is about trance. What is it, in actual fact?
Well, it's just a relaxed state of mind. When your mind is receptive to any sort of positive suggestions, people tend to react differently to hypnosis. Some wake up feeling as though they're floating. Some feel as though they're very heavy and sort of just sinking into the chair. Some have had a tingling feeling in the hands. But normally, one thing that in common is they all feel very relaxed afterwards.
Mm. Yes,
that
I see.
That helps the mind.
Yeah. So, now, John, I want to have an interlude at this point and then come back to you and discuss your work about the successes and difficulties that you have in your work.
Well, this is the section where I discuss my guests' comments and try to explain how and why things that you think are paranormal are quite normal. Today the show is about hypnosis, which is, as our guest explained, close to the sleep and dreaming condition, where the unconscious is in charge and consciousness takes a back seat. And that's what we call trance, where we are somewhat removed from reality, the same as what happens when we dream. Everyone knows the meaning of the word trance, but no one really knows what they mean by trance. What is it? How and why does it work? I asked myself some years ago. Some psychologists and hypnotists say it's a special relaxed state, and some say it is accessing the dream state. But in my book Sublimity, I've detailed my study of trance. I think it varies from normal anger, laughter or crying to dreaming or being hypnotized and a host of strange mental states. And all of these states are either instinctive trance or trance that is not instinctive, what I call non-instinctive trance. This distinction is my own idea, but it does show the mechanism of trance, which was originally necessary to allow emotional, sexual, and instinctive behaviour, like the fear of heights. But it does also now allow non-instinctive trances, like hypnosis. And as well as hypnosis, we can sometimes experience a non-instinctive trance where we imagine we have been before to some place, but common sense tells us that we haven't been there. This we call déjà vu, which is similar to the reason that some people have repeating flashbacks of a trauma or some strange repeating worries. And this is the basis of all mental illness, which is something which I hope to go into in more detail another time. My understanding of trance and distinguishing between instinctive and non-instinctive trance came about when writing my book about the paranormal. The book is called Sublimity, and it takes all the mystery out of trance and telepathy, which gives answers to all paranormal experiences. So now we can go back to John and hear more about practical hypnosis.
Okay. Right, John, now perhaps you could let us know some of your success stories in treating by hypnosis.
Yes. one of the first successes I had, because being as I was always brought up in an engineering background, when I went over to hypnotherapy, I was always a little bit cautious because everything had always been black and white to me, and this this seemed to be something totally new. So one of the first people I had was a publican who smoked about 60 a day, and he'd been doing that for something like 40 years. And I was a little bit concerned that I hadn't sort of stopped him smoking. So I contacted him about 2 months later, and he said, oh, it's as though he'd never smoked. I was absolutely amazed, very pleased, of course. There was a lady that came to see me because she drank excessively. She was always in the pub nearly every night with friends. She gave up drinking after three sessions. And over the last 3 years, I suppose she's weakened a couple of times and returned for what she calls top-ups. And since then, obviously her finances have improved, her health's improved, and her outlook on life is has improved greatly, and she's a much happier person now. There was a lady on antidepressants, and she'd been on them for about 10 years, and it changed her way of life. And she was able to come off the drugs after I gave her hypnotherapy treatment. She said that when she was on antidepressants, she felt like a zombie.
All these things are desperate problems, and people come to you, and normally you're able to give them help and treatment. You work. You have success. What sort of percentage of the time would you say? Is it 80% or 50%?
I like to think it's a high percentage, because very few people come back. Like the smokers, I give the free backup facility, and I would say there's only about 10% of those come back. And often the reason they come back is because they are in a stressful situation, and they've been relying on cigarettes to relieve the stress. So then what I have to do is treat them for stress.
I see. So
One interesting person that came, he said he could never relax in a chair. So I said, but how do you relax at home? He says, oh, at home, I always lay on the floor. He said, the only other thing I do is lay in bed. He said, so I have to lay on the floor. So I said, oh, okay then. So he tried laying on the floor, but for some reason or other, my floor wasn't comfortable enough for him, so he went home.
But you do have
There's only been a few people that haven't responded. Like I say, sometimes the first session has been a bit difficult, but normally after the first session, they do respond a lot better.
Yes, I see. And are there other difficulties you have from time to time?
When people, one case in particular, my mother-in-law insisted that the daughter-in-law should give up drinking. And so the mother-in-law virtually frog-marched her here to say, right, stop the drinking. So I said, well, I can't stop the drinking unless she wants to. And in the end, the daughter-in-law says, oh, yes, I want to stop. Well, as soon as the mother-in-law had gone out of the room talking to her, you could tell that she didn't want to stop. And she came to me for about three or four sessions because mother-in-law was paying, and she just liked chatting to me. She said, I've got no intention of giving up drinking. But it's nice just chatting away to you. Mother-in-law was very pleased.
No, that obviously was not a very successful cure. Well, thanks very much, John. It's been great talking to you and learning some of the details of your work and a little bit about hypnosis. Thanks very much again.
Well, thanks a lot for your call, Richard. Speak to you later.
Yes, okay, thanks. Right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
So, this is Richard Allibone with Paranormal is Normal, brought to you once a week by webtalkradio.net. And my website is www.sublimity.org.uk. That's sublimity.org.uk. And it has details of my book Sublimity, which was published by Author House. Surely paranormal is normal. And it's only a matter of learning how and why these two things, that's trance and telepathy, are our normal states of mind. Today we looked at hypnosis, which is a very typical trance state, which accesses unconsciousness. It helps us to cure stress and addictions, all these sorts of things, and things associated with that part of us which is difficult to understand and difficult to deal with. These are non-instinctive trances, but they use the mechanism of instinct and instinctive trances. It was during the evolution of consciousness that the mechanism of trance became much stronger to enable proper instinctive behaviour. We still go into instinctive trance today when we cry or laugh, but because of this strong trance system, we can have non-instinctive trances, for example, hypnosis, delusions, or addictions, which conscious mind is unable to correct. It's by the use of hypnosis that these unconscious urges and desires may be sometimes corrected. This simple and obvious explanation has been missed by psychologists, showing us how and why we go into trance. I do hope that my guest was able to help you realize that hypnosis uses trance, which is all perfectly normal. This is Richard Allibone signing off for this week. Thanks for listening.